Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. You can find them on X at Polillo and at Josh Jordan 975 respectively. And in between our episodes here, you can read their blogs covering all things Houston sports over on sportsmap.com. On today's episode, when does a split not feel like a split? I'll give you a hint. It starts with a negative 21 run differential. The latest update on Yordan leaves the Astros medical staff with so much egg on their face, the clubhouse is serving huevos rancheros for the next month. And if this is Romber's last dance in Houston, should they have found him some better dance partners? We'll dig into all that and more. Okay, guys, the positive stuff first. The Astros close out the homestand going 7-3. Houston is the only team in the West with a winning record over the past 10 games, and Fromber pitched the most efficient Astros complete game since Daryl Kyle in 93. On the other side of the ledger, the Rays series was about as bipolar as we've seen this team all season, oscillating between bullpen meltdowns and dominant starting pitching. The one thing that was consistent was a very underwhelming offense, scratching across just 9 runs versus the 30 surrendered over the 4 games with Tampa. The cherry on tap, Chaz McCormick, Zach DiCenzo both hit the IL over the weekend to accompany the news that Yordan's not as close as returning as previously believed. We will dig into the Yordan news in a few minutes. But as it stands, Jets, Charlie, we'll start with you. Which is the bigger challenge slash concern going forward with Houston? The thin state of the lineup, the shaky rotation players not named Fromber and Hunter, or the recent bullpen troubles?
All right, I'll start at the end of the threesome there. I wouldn't sweat the bullpen as long as Hader and Abreu stay sound. They've both been sensational pretty much from opening day to this point. Hader now 15 for 15 in save opportunities. Ah, save opportunity conversion can be deceptive. See Josh Hader 2024. But he's worthy of that statistic. He's been lights out. Abreu similarly, even if a little bit adventurous from time to time. Brian King was frankly due for a clunker. You know, third, fourth, fifth relievers, they're going to blow up sometimes, right? Caleb Ort doing the same thing. At least Forrest Whitley's just not really a major league pitcher and probably going to get injured again anyway. That King's ERA was going to stay in the low to mid ones. And we are still in a low enough innings where one outing, in King's case, more than doubled his ERA. So, yeah, they may have some difficult moments, but if the 1-2 is rock solid, you'll go to battle with the bullpen. The rotation, you know, and then there were two you could count on. McCullough is going deeper. We talked about 102 pitches. Really, was that a good idea? Hunter Brown, you know, there's no reason to send up a warning flare when a guy throws 6 innings of one-hit baseball, as Brown did Sunday, lowering his earned run average to 1.83. But as we noted last week, as the Astros mapped out the pitching, Hunter Brown made his first start of the season on 4 days rest. Every prior start was exactly on 5 days rest. Now, 4 days rest shouldn't be a big deal. That's not overly taxing a guy, certainly not for one start. But the Astros need to deal realistically with their co-ace, right? Brown blowing past professional innings highs each of the last 2 seasons. And as effective as he ultimately was with 6 shutout innings, he was as wild as we've seen him this season, and most of the wildness was arm side, which can be an indicator of a little fatigue, not finishing off your pitches. I think Hunter Brown had been so awesome this season, you just chalk it up to, well, he bleeds, he's human, and on an off day of command, he still threw 6 shutout innings. But it bears watching going forward. I definitely don't think you contemplate going with him on 4 days rest in either of his next couple of starts. Well, the off day Monday helps defray that if you can trust guys to give you some competent work at the back end of the rotation, right? Fromber, as we've talked about, over the long haul, he's Fromber. He's a top 10 starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. He's been money five straight times now. So there's your 1-2. McCullers needs to do more before we say, all right, Lance has three on lockdown. Arrighetti's not coming back until the All-Star break. How much juice can you squeeze from Ryan Gusto and Colton Gordon, who really don't profile as guys who should be solid big league starters? But how many rotations are just, hey, we're great in the four and five spots in the rotation? And then to take it to the front, the lineup. You hit on it. I mean, the offense was largely impotent against the Rays. 9 runs in the 4 games. The Sunday win, they scratched out 1 unearned run, which the pitching staff made stand up. Got a look at Jacob Melton, but his results in the minor leagues aren't saying phenom. He's only up here because of the latest hand inflammation injury, right? DeCenzo joining Yordan in that club. So I'm wary of the bats, right? Christian Walker seems to still have 1 step forward, 2 steps back. Yiner Diaz with the game-winning homer for Fromber. But his overall body of work while trending up is still not good. Certainly not worthy of a guy should be hitting 4-5 in the lineup. Altuve on balance had an outstanding homestand, 385 batting average, but most of the production was concentrated in 2 games, 6-for-8 with 4 of the 5 home runs. And Isak Paredes, his first Astros funk, 1 for his last 23 going into the Pittsburgh series. I'm not overly worried about that. He started 57 of 59 games, and I know he's only 26 years old and it's baseball, not running a marathon, but maybe just a little fatigue and a 1 day off reset will be a good thing for him.
Yeah, I think we got a good look at what the lineup appears to be when Paredes is not hitting well. He had 1 hit between the 2 series against the A's and the Rays. I'm not worried long term, but it's just kind of a reminder when your best hitter isn't in the lineup, and it's already a mediocre lineup. They're 14th in OPS right now, so pretty much middle of the pack, 18th in runs scored. So I just don't know if the offense is going to get much better outside of healthy guys coming back like Yordan and contributing. So I just think this is kind of where they are. The bullpen, I'm not too worried about. As you know, Charlie said, I didn't think King was going to have an ERA below 2 for the entire season. Caleb Ort now, his ERA's jumped up to 6.91, and now King's is up to 3.28. So, yeah, we are in that part of the season where, you know, 1 bad outing can come out and get you. But, yeah, it's going to be the fourth and fifth starters. Can they keep giving you enough? Can McCullers continue to go deeper in games? That's where most of my concern is. I just think they're going to be kind of a middle-of-the-road offense. I don't see that changing much unless Yordan goes on a tear if and when he comes back.
Yeah, it rides with Yordan, and I know we're about to sink our teeth into that. But, hey, salute to Jeremy Peña. We're still about a month out from settling on all-star rosters, but he's about locked down a spot. Since the move to the leadoff spot, 32 games through the conclusion of the Rays series, 357 batting average, right? That's a little over a month's worth of baseball. OPS over 900. Still continues to play the excellent defense at shortstop. Bat the ball, so important. Peña has dropped his strikeout rate more than 20% from last season while increasing his walk rate by more than 60%. Now, he still chases a lot. He swings at pitches outside the strike zone more than 75% of major leaguers. But his first 3 seasons, Jeremy Peña was in the bottom 11%. Now he's in the bottom 25 percentile. So improvement there. The walks, you know, never going to be Ricky Henderson or prime Craig Biggio in drawing walks. But for a guy who was embarrassingly undisciplined and walked on average just under once per week last season, a 60% bump along with the batting average over 300, Jeremy Peña, to this point in the season, is a guy who would be in contention to win MVP. It's Aaron Judge, and then it's Aaron Judge. But you vote 1 through 10 on a Most Valuable Player Award ballot if you have one. And Jeremy Peña would belong on that with what he has done now more than 1/3 of the way through this season.
And just quickly with those 2 guys, over the past week, Peña and Altuve both with an OPS over 1,000. So those guys have been coming through. And I just really quickly on Altuve, I noticed in the finale against the Rays, they had a chance to tack on an extra run late in the game with Jeremy Peña on second base. And Altuve's trying to drop a bunt down, you know, and I'm sitting there going, what the hell is he doing? And I'm
like, you were going to say that.
Yeah, am I missing something? And then Jeff Blum goes, yeah, I'm having a hard time trying to figure out what Altuve's thinking right there. I'm like, you need a base hit to score Peña. A bunt doesn't score him. behind you, you have Christian Walker, and a typical lineup, the four hitter, you're like, oh, great, you know, load him up for him. But he's basically statistically your worst hitter. So it doesn't make sense to me. Altuve is such a veteran, a Hall of Fame type talent. But sometimes I don't know in the moment what makes him do some of the things that he does.
When I watched that live, you were the first person I thought of, because I know you've had such a big problem with him laying down bunts in those situations.
And he strikes out too. Like, you can't waste a chance to hit a strike, because he go 0-for-4 in the finale. I know most of the guys struggled, but I'm just saying, like, I don't get it. Don't waste an opportunity to make contact on a strike.
Yeah. It was a bad play.
And Charlie, I'm with you. You have to wonder what this offense would look like without Jeremy Pena producing at this level. That's for sure. Thank goodness Altuve looks like he's turned a corner. Charlie, you brought up the hand inflammation for Zach DiCenzo. Brian McTaggart tweeted out that Zach was going to be seen by doctors. The first comment on that tweet asked whether it was real doctors or Astros doctors. And I think that's a good transition into the big headline turned punchline from the weekend, was the revelation that Yordan Alvarez has a fractured hand that's about 60% healed. The team admits that having him hit through the injury likely exacerbated the problem. I don't know where we start on here, because we've had so many discussions on this channel about the spotted history of Houston's medical staff and the vague, if not deceptive, sometimes inaccurate nature of the updates regarding players' health. Just the past couple of seasons, the team rushed back Javier, France, McCullers, Garcia, and now Alvarez back too soon from injuries. And in all those cases, led to varying degrees of setbacks. But we know the problem goes back even further than those examples. What are your thoughts on the Yordan news? And then just in general, at what point does this team have to wrap their hands around Houston's return to play policies?
2 years ago, 3 years ago, when James Click said, yeah, we probably need to look into this. And all this time later, this is an embarrassment. It's a disgrace. It's self-damaging. Frankly, it's negligence as a baseball operation. You know, all the Tommy John injuries, they're epidemic over baseball, or flexor tendon injury, whatever's involved. Now, the Astros sit at the head table amidst the epidemic, but the Dodgers are there, the Rays are there, the Guardians are there. So it's not that the Astros get a pass on it. But this Yordan Alvarez case, if you want to say just the season after Kyle Tucker, but especially in Yordan's case, where they had the first examination and, well, swelling, we couldn't find anything. And they do not re-examine him for over 3 weeks, as if that should have been upon Yordan himself. So Dana Brown can prattle on about, well, swelling and inflammation, bone structure and blah, 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 blah. They F this up royally. So leave secretive or dissembling or obfuscation or lying to the side. I mean, this was just alarmingly stupid. And Jim Crane, you can keep paying Yordan now more than $100,000 for every game that he sits out for a longer period than he should be sitting out, because, of course, swinging a bat. And we touched upon this last week, and scar tissue and this and that. It's a fracture. It's a fracture. And that they did not discover that, not necessarily 3-4 weeks ago, but no re-examination until a couple of days ago. That is baseball operationally brain dead.
It's incompetence. I don't know how you get around it any other way. This guy is the best player on your team. He signed long-term for a ton of money. He has chronic hand issues. And you're not going to re-examine him when an injury is taking longer than they thought that it should take, and he's still complaining that it's bothering him? And you're not going to keep doing x-rays and look at these things? Why? What are you doing? What would you say you do here? And then they look like clowns. They do some tribute to some of the Astros medical team on the field this weekend. And after this huge debacle, I'm just like, you can't make this stuff up. I don't know what they're doing, but they're just hurting themselves. It doesn't make any sense. They come out after Christian Walker gets hit in the hand. He says he's feeling okay, and the x-rays came back negative, and we move on. But with Yordan, you do this with your best player. It just makes me wonder, is there like a limit to the amount of x-rays and imaging that they can get? Is it a budgetary thing? Because why else wouldn't you be checking on your best player who has chronic hand issues and getting the most information as often as possible? It blows my mind.
Yeah, so to reiterate is actually redundant of iterate. Whatever is the actual truth in terms of their secretive nature, deception, arrogance in Will Let Out One, are they just moronically optimistic over some of these injuries where time after time they grossly understated what turned out to be reality? All that is in a separate compartment from Yordan being handled negligently to the damage of the Astros themselves. And so if they miss the playoffs by one game, you know, well, might Yordan have made the difference in that one game over the 20 or 30 games additional time he's going to miss because the Astros themselves, whether lying to themselves, inept, someone forgot to put it on the calendar. Oh, yeah, let's get Yordan reexamined for an update now that swelling's probably going down. This one to me is incomprehensible. All the other stuff agitating to me, it's condescension toward your fans and the media if you're going to futz around with what you discuss. But this is just a whole different level and category of, are you freaking kidding us?
There were so many red flags from the stuff that came out from the Yordan news. Partly that Yordan and his agent pushed for additional imaging, which Dana Brown said the team discourages, that they don't want the guys going out and getting their own image. So I'm paraphrasing there, but what? Why wouldn't you want as much information as possible, especially if the player is going to do it on their own dime? And then secondly, just aside from this incident, I have to go back to something you said, Charlie, which Jim Crane's reputation precedes him as being a shrewd businessman, as a guy who's tough to work for. And it's staggering that a guy that has seemingly consolidated so much power in this organization following the sign-stealing scandal and the dismissal of Lunau, it's staggering that a guy that has done all that, and yet he doesn't do more to protect his investments. Because that is what you're doing. That's what this is about. This is about being able to get return. It's ROI on the guys that you're already paying.
It really is this fiasco specifically. And, you know, what Astro would ever say, oh, I'll just trust the team staff. Why would I want to go get a second opinion?
It's unbelievable. So it's arrogant. It's arrogant.
It really is.
Right.
And Jim Crane thus far has been unavailable for comment, I guess. But this one rises to the level, or I guess truly sinks to the level of, if only symbolically, a head would roll. How did this get through different levels of the organizational hierarchy that this is how it was handled? There might be something comparable out there. But we'd have to think hard. Well, I guess Kyle Tucker a year ago with the Astros made a run at it. But this one, to me, even more so.
Discouraging second opinions. You could tell they're like, we have the medical people and we know we don't need to get any other input. It's called an opinion because it's an opinion. And by the way, your first opinion was wrong. You thought it was just a muscle. So a second opinion, that could have given you something. They would have seen that there was a fracture in the bone. It's just, I don't know what else to say that you would discourage getting other opinions when it turned out the opinion that you gave him was wrong.
Yeah, I saw comments on social media to the effect of, well, what does it matter what the team tells us or the media? Like, the end result's still the same. That's not the point. The point is they were having this man hit with a bat through an injury that they now admit exacerbated the problem. That's the point. It's not just the confusing communication that comes from the team. It's now that it's actively hurting their own players with misdiagnoses. Really alarming. Just a quick message. If you're interested in advertising your service or product on this show, I promise I won't curse in the future. You can contact our friends on the sales team at houston.sportsmap.com/advertise. The link is also in our description, or at least I promise I'll bleep it out. Look, we touched on Fromber's magnificent performance Friday. I don't think there's a soul alive that follows this team that thinks the Astros will make a serious run at retaining him following this season. So With that in mind, instead of prioritizing getting under the CBT, which is was clearly Houston's goal this season, should they have done more to shove, given that this team won't have two aces at the front of their rotation next year?
Well, look, the easy response certainly in a tunnel is, of course, this era, you want to squeeze every last drop of milk out of the udder of this cash cow era for Jim Crane and Houston Astros baseball. I mean, if we knew as fact that the Astros will not be in the World Series this fall, would there not be an argument that, hey, let their whole rotation 3 through 5 just implode? Lousy performance, more injuries, guys overmatched, that they almost would have no choice if they intend to be legit in 2026 to put a competitive offer there for Fromber, and he and Hunter Brown are the two guys fronting the rotation because the organization basically has no other starting pitching. But I think you're emboldened, and we've discussed before how you start believing your poop smells like lavender and jasmine, and that no matter what, when it all comes out in the wash, the Astros will be there. And you can understand some of it mentality, but it's not going to hold up forever, right? They've slipped from the ranks of elite team to good team the last two seasons. And let's be real, the American League West is the only division that the Astros would have a viable chance to win this year. Hey, that's the division they're in, so go for it as best you can. Here's my standard caveat. They are still in the top 8. In payroll. They did not go slash and burn, but your question was, should they have gone above and beyond and damn the CBT thresholds, full speed ahead?
I think the Tucker trade is when everything changed, or what led up to the Tucker trade. Because typically they don't do that, right? These guys play out their contracts and then they move on. But this is the exception where I think they looked at what they had and they said, Tucker's not, he's not signing long-term with us. That is not happening. So I think in that moment, they decided to make a play for prioritizing the long plan. And that's where we are right here. And clearly Fromber's not in their plans. They're going to let him walk. He said they haven't even talked to his agent, which to not even like take the temperature of what you think the number might be, I think is kind of insane. But yeah, I think they pivoted to where they're trying to keep this window open, and just instead of trying to be elite, I think they're just trying to be competitive. And Jim Crane wants to keep the salary down, and that they don't want to lose draft picks and stuff like that because the farm system is already in the state that it's in. So I think they pivoted to a long-term plan when they moved Tucker. And they're going to try and reload next season when all this money falls off the books. But you're counting on Luis Garcia to come back. You're counting on Christian Javier to come back and be an ace type pitcher. That's what there was probably in their brain was like, oh, we'll have Hunter Brown and Christian Javier at the top of the rotation. That'll still be really good. But we don't know how Javier is going to bounce back. And then you mentioned too, Brandon, we forgot to throw Wes Neski in there. They rushed him back when his velo was down. He blew out his elbow next start. They're making a lot of poor decisions. So expecting this rotation, is Arrighetti going to actually be a good starting pitcher? We haven't seen a huge sample size with him. We don't know what they have with McCullers. That's the great thing about Fromber. He's just so durable. And I think the Astros, I don't know if they appreciate that enough why he's here. I think they're going to miss how much they count on Fromber to go out there and protect the bullpen when he's gone next year.
But here they are heading into Pittsburgh and then Cleveland, plus or minus a half game from first place. Granted, location, 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 American League West, but that's their real estate. They basically owned it for almost a decade, and they haven't lost their grip on it yet.
Yeah, but Josh, you said something about keeping the window open, but open for what is what I wonder, because it's not a championship.
Yeah.
Because they got swept out of the playoffs last year with a, on paper, better lineup than they brought in this year. So there was no hope that you were going to do better. The hope was, like, well, you'll get more pitching in, and maybe Yordan goes on a tear, Altuve, and maybe Christian Walker doesn't forget how to hit once he comes to Houston. And outside of that, though, they were counting on the team to do better with, I think, a worse lineup offensively. And that didn't get the job done last season. I don't think there was any reason on paper to think it was going to get the job done this season. And after you get out of playing the AL West, then you get into the playoffs. And that's where the good teams play. But as far as keeping a window open, I just wonder what this team thinks that window of accomplishment can be.
It's a window of selling t-shirts and hats, Brandon. Hey, division champs. I think that's a lot of it.
I agree. I think you sell more Tucker t-shirts than you do Christian Walker t-shirts. That's just my opinion. Just curious, Charlie, before we're out the door here, and I'll ask this to both of you guys. How much do you think a Frommer costs?
He'll be 32 years old when he starts pitching under his next contract. Now, he'd been durable and he's been outstanding for half a decade. Since he was such a late bloomer, he didn't have all kinds of wear and tear on that arm in his early mid-20s. He wasn't throwing 180, 190 innings per year until he turned 26, 27 years old. You know, templates of Max Fried and Corbin Burns aren't far off. Frommer's a little bit older. Burns was a year younger when he got 6 years, basically 210 mil, 35 mil per year from the Diamondbacks. I could see 5 years, 160 plus for Frommer. I don't think he'll get Max Fried 8 years as a 32-year-old pitcher. For instance, Fried, 28, I think, when he signed with the Yankees. But this Frommer, if he holds up soundly the rest of the season, certainly exceeds $30 million per.
Yeah, I would say the starting point's got to be, what, $150 million, something like that, and then go up from there. I thought of Blake Snell as a comp. He got 5 years, $182 million, just lefty, you know, top of the rotation type guy. So yeah, I think it starts at 150 million bucks and it's probably going to be a little more than that.
Well, that prices out the Astros. And let me just circle back to what I said about Christian Walker before anyone jumps on me. I'm rooting for Christian Walker. I want Christian Walker to do well, but in a vacuum, I'm just saying MVP level Tucker definitely sells more merch than Christian Walker. One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcasts on apps like Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating while you're here. On a side note, we had one of our podcast listeners last week jump over to YouTube to give us a like on the video, just to do that. They'd already heard the episode, but wanted to jump over and give us a like. So, hey, it sounds like a little small thing, but it makes all the difference, and we do appreciate the support. Our next scheduled episode drops on Thursday, so make sure you're subscribed to this channel because we also drop emergency episodes as big news breaks, so make sure those notifications are on. Thanks for listening. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long, and until next time, go Astros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.